we are.
It got turned on, didn't it?
I'll say.
Good job. Yeah. Yeah. The song always makes me feel bounce. It's Susie and the
Banshees.
I feel
like I'm in Asia.
Yeah.
It feels very Chinese.
It really does.
Hello.
Oh, hello. I was waiting for the fade.
Fade? No, it's just a dead end.
Yeah, just a dead end. Hello. You are listening to the Voice of Vashon 101.9 in beautiful Vashon Island, Washington. 101.9, did I say that?
Yeah, you said that.
KVSH. Okay, there now. We know where we are.
And voiceofvashon.org.
Yes, there. That's our website. And we have an app, too. You can get that. The app is great.
Who are you?
I am Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host today. We're sitting here sort of as the answer to Vashon's, I don't even have time for coffee this week, you know? So we hope maybe you can sit down and pull up a chair and relax with us. In the studio here with me are Susan McCabe. Hi, Susan.
Hello, and welcome to The Clatch.
Yeah, welcome to The Clatch. And a special guest host, Miss Jennifer Potter.
Hello.
Hi, Jennifer. Welcome. I'm so glad you came.
Thank you for inviting me.
If you don't know, oh yeah, and we have one more thing to introduce. We have Nutmeg here in the studio with us. Nutmeg is Susan's beautiful dog, and so if you hear some clicking toenails, or if you hear a little roof, roof.
Those are mine.
Yeah, those are Jennifer's.
Winter grooming.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, you know, I know that Vashon people know who Jennifer Potter is. But for you
Maybe
listeners in the UK.
If I don't owe the money.
Yeah. Or South America or Florida, if you're listening from the Netherlands, maybe you don't know.
Or the Cayman Islands.
That's where you want to be.
No.
So anyway, let me introduce Jennifer. So for the past 20 years, Vashon Island's very own Jennifer Potter has been the creatrix. I love that word. Of every kind of community event, large and small, nonprofit island organizations, acting, singing, dancing, dishwashing, and hosting events. She's the former owner and chief restoration officer of the infamous Jesus Barn. And we'll tell you all more about Jesus Barn another day, probably, but it's a really interesting thing. Also, it's also a community events venue. This is where she raised her two kids, who are now 14 and 16. She was the lead singer of a well-loved alt-country band and a vaudevillian by marriage with the Royal Famille du Carnival. Nice, what does that mean?
Nice pronunciation. Thank
you.
Gutter people.
The
Royal
gutter
Family
people.
Of the Gutter.
Cool.
That's great.
Carnival. Today, Carnival. She is one part of the dynamic duo with Tammy Brockway Joyce, which bore the Washington State Fairies singing telegram. That's the fairy with wings, not the fairy that goes across the sound.
Always on time.
Yeah, always on time. And she held the esteemed title of official, unofficial mayorette, as well as the popular potty mouth, famous Filson Sisters. And if you have not heard the Filson Sisters on Voice of Vashon, you need to tune in. When is it on, Jennifer?
Well, we're consistently inconsistent.
Yeah.
But I think it's the second Sunday of the month.
And then it's there on the archives.
Yeah, so lots you can, of our 8 to 10 yeah. p.m., a couple of guests. Yeah, and
it's
if anyone,
a fabulous
no one
show.
Under 12 should be listening.
No, that's true.
Right, this is true.
That's true. Yes.
So, and it's called The Broadcast.
The Broadcast, yeah.
The Broadcast.
Jennifer has a 30-year degree as a court reporter, and I'm sure you know lots of really good stories, which I would really love to hear sometime. And she lives on the island. She's now developing a neighborhood grocery store and gathering place in the former Grange. She lives in the North End with her partner, two teenagers, and pets. We're so glad to have you here, Jennifer.
Thank you. I'm Susan McCabe's neighbor.
Yes.
That's my big claim to fame. Two doors down. It's a country song we're working on.
Two doors down. That's
two doors
a good
down.
Idea. Yeah.
I got tears on my ears from lying on my back and crying
over you.
That's
you.
The only country song I know.
And somebody's boots under my bed.
That sounds
one would
good.
Hope.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's have a little check-in here. See how everybody's doing. How are you doing, Susan? What's going on in your world?
I don't think we want to talk about that.
Pass.
Okay. That's understandable.
Yeah.
I think I'll do that too. Yeah. And what about you, Jennifer? Were you in Seattle today?
No, I was home today. I'm happy to report, actually, that I do not commute for work any longer.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, so that's fabulous.
I've been on the island for a little over 20 years, and for 18 of those, I was a nearly full-time commuter.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did it.
I don't either.
And I can't imagine ever going back. So I work from home now.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
All court proceedings, including the kind I do, which are pre-trial, which are depositions, mm-hmm. discovery depositions, are online. So we do them via Zoom.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's amazing.
Oh, it saves money and time and headache
the
and
resources
parking.
I used to spend to make money was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dry cleaning, the lunches, parking,
like you
taxis,
have to you have to
ferry.
Go to work to pay for all that.
Yes, I had a downtown office for 28 years.
Wow.
I mean, I love being home.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I haven't been doing anything, really. In case you're interested.
Lucky broad.
I've been baking a little bit, and I've been walking, and I've been reading, and nothing real exciting is coming up, except that I'm really happy to report that I'm not stressed out about the season at all.
Not you know, I'm finding that that's fairly epidemic.
Now,
that may not be true for people like you who have children.
Who have kids, yeah.
Yes.
I'm feeling okay this year.
I
mean, what's both of your secrets? And I'll tell you where I'm at after I hear from you. Why are you not stressed out?
You know, I just decided not to be. And if it doesn't get done, it doesn't get done. And really, I decided not to decorate this year because I want to do solstice and just solstice. And then I don't want to clean up in January.
Right.
I don't want to put all this stuff away again. I know, that's
the
a terrible true confession.
The boxing, the wrapping, the unwrapping.
Yeah.
I know, it is sort of a process to go through, isn't it?
And then a dead tree.
Right.
So last year, though, I should tell this to everybody. Last year, I took the tree to the old goat's home, you know, the rent-a-ruminant.
Right.
And you can take your tree out there, and the goats love it. There's something wonderful in the pine needles that gives them upset. Their stomachs don't get upset. There's something for their digestive system in the pine needles, and they just devour those trees.
So it's sort
they
of like Zantac for goats.
Maybe. Pine needle. Mm-hmm. Yule Gibbons would know. Do you remember him?
God. Unfortunately,
eat
yes.
a pine tree.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's about what's going on here.
And are you just home this year, Susan? You're not
yes.
traveling?
Yes.
You're not hosting?
No, we are not. You know, I celebrate with my kids around Thanksgiving. And this year, we did it at Halloween. And we called it Thanksween. They came up from L.A. and we did our feasting and costuming and hanging out in the street. We had a great time.
It's kind of a relief, really.
Oh, very much so. That's what, you know, I remember being a mom of children and having to be the magic maker. You have to make all the magic and all the decorations and the presents and the secrets.
Oh, but see, I loved that when I had kids. I loved it.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not entirely ignoring Christmas this year. I'm going to spend it with my son and his wife in Seattle.
And let them do the magic making.
And they'll make magic. They always do.
I like that.
So we're... our Christmas will be a big, fat brunch that lasts all day, which is really nice.
Nice.
You know.
Here's where I'm at. We usually travel out of state for the holidays. Mm. And it's usually Idaho or California, depending on where my mom's at the time. She's lucky enough to have two houses that can host and encompass our whole family. Myself, my younger brothers, who both have three children each, and... I'm a decade or so older than my brothers, so my kids are older, and so we're all sort of de facto babysitters and cooks when we're there. And then sometimes we rotate houses, and I've hosted every other year here on the island. And then I have a partner who has a grown child in her 30s, so I have teens. He has a child in her early 30s, and she has children.
Wow.
So there's a 7 and a 5-year-old. Almost 5-year-old, and some incorporating Christmas with them can be tricky. They're in California as well, and sometimes they're up here where she grew up, his daughter grew up, and they visit, and sometimes we host and then drive to Idaho the next day. It's maddening.
Ugh. Oh, yeah.
And I do it anyway because of the magic, you know.
Right.
Magic. I'm a magic maker. And
it's the happiest time of the year.
And we got a new dog this year, and I just thought, And I think we were scheduled to be in Idaho. And I just said, you know what? What if we, this is sort of a dissension in my family, but what if we stayed home? And also, let's pull back on the stuff. We're both anti-stuff this year. We've had it. We've had it with the stuff. And we want to do experiences. So we're going to Leavenworth for 3 days.
Mm,
we're
going.
We're going sledding. We're eating out. We're staying in a hotel where we can walk around town. And we're having Linda, lovely Linda, go over and watch our new dog.
Oh, perfect.
So we're happy to pay for the experience and the 300 thread count sheets
at
the Enzian Inn. And go, they have a swimming pool.
And there's no work involved.
No.
Driving.
And my teens can have a long leash. They know Leavenworth well, so they can roam around. And I just think that's the best thing than having to order
something
off the internet.
That makes so much sense. And I am hearing this from a lot of people.
I'm glad.
Do experiences or do consumables.
Yep.
Or donations.
Or donations, yes. Yeah. Don't bother with the stuff. And even the stuff that you order online is using up resources in the planet and creating more plastic, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm hearing, and I'm also hearing people say, we're just kind of cutting back on the whole busyness of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, knock it off.
A lot more peace, a lot more.
Do you think it's because we're coming out of the pandemic, too, where we really get a sense of what busy is now that things have been opening up and the cogs of our regular wheels of our life are just moving at such a fast pace again? And I think we're reminded of time when we were home. It was quieter. It was a cleaner time, less consumables. And it was... It just wasn't so much running around and having to get here to and fro.
Well, I think, too, spending that much time alone for that long of a period of time taught us more about what's important, what we want.
Yes.
Like, what's the difference between what you want and what you need? And really, we don't need anything. And I know that sounds really Pollyanna and it's cliche, kind of. But
I like it.
It's the truth.
Yeah, it is the truth.
I don't want any more stuff.
Yeah.
I decided
years ago that I was going to do because I used to hate Christmas. I was the original Grinch. No Christmas. And fortunately, my husband is kind of there with me. So I decided I will do the things as I crept back into Christmas, the things that I like. I like the lights. I like the food. I like gathering with friends. That's about it.
Yeah.
Experiences, if we can
That's
make
it.
Them. Yeah, yeah, right.
You said it all right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't.
I do love hosting, though.
I do too.
But it can go way overboard.
I know.
And then,
easily.
And then I have like a hitch in my giddy up for like 2 weeks left. And I wonder why I'm exhausted because I can really put it on too much. We are hosting my partner's daughter and her family just for a day.
Which coming up for a day from California?
Well, no, they'll be here in this part of like Seattle area for a little bit. But there's a lot of family who are speaking for their time. And you know, their kids are cute. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to spend time with
Get them. Over
cute
here.
Kids, but I'm going to manage it. I think we might do something like pizza. Why not?
Why not?
Make our own pizzas.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah. Kids love that too.
Christmas pizza.
Yeah.
It's a new
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Happy
Christmas.
Happy
holidays.
Kwanzaa.
What are the
Kwanzaa.
Kwanzaa, right.
What else? There's everything right now. Just happy. Happy, happy.
Does anybody remember what the pagan origins of this holiday are? There's something, it's got to be something about bringing back the light, because that was the whole
thing. Solstice is the whole
thing.
It's really the whole thing happened because pagans did solstice, and then the Christians came in and decided that it needed to be about Christ.
Right. Yeah. Wrote a book about it.
And they wrote a book about it,
Right.
It became a bestseller.
That's a whole other show, isn't it? I'd love to do that.
Should we dive into religion next time?
Oh, yeah,
really?
Let's do that.
I think that's,
sounds like we might all be on the same wavelength. So
yeah,
that
I think
might be
so.
Easy.
I think so. Well, you know.
Religion and politics, my two favorite things for dinner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oof.
And grooming. I love to talk about grooming on Vashon. Yeah, grooming habits are one of my favorite things to talk
about. I'm sitting here looking at you like,
setting.
What?
What
the
about
grooming habits of Vashonites is endlessly fascinating to me.
Why? Because they don't?
or do. And it's funny. It's, like, it's
not
interesting
even any,
what they choose.
And there's not even any trimming. It's not, just no trimming going on here.
There are a few that actually overdo.
Well, that's true too. Yeah.
But yeah, there isn't a lot. I'm a perfect example.
Well,
for me, putting on earrings is getting dressed up,
mm-hmm.
and putting mm-hmm. on clean jeans.
Thank you.
Well, we like that. We like that. You know, I've been thinking about this season and how dark it is, and how it's just dark, dark, dark. And how would you feel? We're still lucky. We still don't have terrible weather and electrical outages right now.
Yeah.
And we don't have, I said right now, yeah. and we don't have bombs in our backyards. And I've been thinking about Ukraine, and it's Christmas. And, you know, Ukrainian Christmas is a big deal. And the people over there are suffering so with darkness and bombs and
uncertainty.
Uncertainty, yeah. and they've lost their homes. And
the biggest kind of uncertainty. Yeah.
I know. So I'd like to do a little nod to Ukraine, because I found one thing about culture. We talk a lot about culture on this show, and their culture is one of sharing and happiness, and they have a huge art culture there as well. And I read an article the other day that talked about how the Ukrainians have, since the beginning of the war, since the invasion, they have been immediately, like the Russians did during World War II, have taken all the art underground, and they've hidden it, and
yeah,
they've squirreled it away.
Was, yeah.
And to me, you know, that's what matters. It's part of the culture. It's part of their past. It's part of their future as well. And I felt when I read that article, I could feel the power of the people just saying, no, you're not going to take this. You can take my house, you can take my library, but you cannot take my art. And it reminded me of what happened in Stalingrad when the Second World War came. You know, it was...
What was that? What happened?
Well, you know, the Hermitage in St. Petersburg is filled with art, right? And it was people there took it and hid it, and they buried it, and it was a huge community effort because they knew the bad guys were coming, and they had
and
a little
bit
of.
And now they are the bad guys.
And well, but they still have the art. You know, they still have the art.
Russians
and the Russian
do.
People are not the bad guys. Putin is the bad guy.
Well, yeah.
In the article that you sent in a lead up to that subject, I read the article, and it was so fascinating what you just spoke of. I hadn't thought before about our art is an artifact of war as well, because there's so many depictions of war, religious and other kinds, through the history, through history, and it is a pictorial evidence of art of those times and of current times.
And we would have no other way of knowing.
Exactly.
No other way of knowing. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen 50 or 100 or 500 years from now, but it's nice to think that perhaps our art will survive, and the art in the Ukraine will survive. In Ukraine, it's not the Ukraine.
It's Ukraine.
Ukraine.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
And it will tell the story.
Maybe I'm jumping ahead, but the interesting article about librarians quickly archiving thousands and thousands and thousands of texts.
Well, that's the thing.
Oh my gosh.
I wanted to talk about that because they're called warrior librarians.
Yes, warrior librarians.
And you know, one of the librarians was appalled, of course, at the bombs and all the horror that she saw. And she just thought, you know, I'm going to do something about this. And she started saving books and putting, you know, things away in the library and hiding things. And then they were talking about how in the war, the whole world comes in, or the whole world pretty much has come in to support Ukraine. And they need guns and bombs and, you know, rifles and clothes and that kind of things. And the librarians need Epson printers and scanners and
hard drives.
Right. Yep. And so this, a librarian whose name I cannot pronounce, formed sort of a, like we would call a 501c3, but I'm sure it's not that there, and got donations. And suddenly, these giant boxes of gear were showing up at different places, and people were saying, what is this?
Oh, fireproof safes.
Yes, fireproof safes. And they were donated to the librarians. And that's why, I think that's why they're called the warrior librarians. You know, they're saving all the data.
I think that's really cool. Yeah.
The data that the Russians attacked the libraries first.
They did?
Yes.
Yeah, they went to many, many, many Codicil archive places.
Yes,
gone.
That are
first.
Gone. First.
Because, attacking
well,
their history.
Well, it's a way to, you know, get...
Demoralized.
Russia and Ukraine have this battle history for centuries.
Well, they're trying to expunge their culture.
It's, yes.
Yeah.
It's almost genocide. Genocide. Maybe it is genocide. Yeah. I don't know.
It's very
but,
deep genocide.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just bodies. It's not just humans. It's
how you think
yeah.
and what matters
yeah.
to you. Mm-hmm. Taking away the sacred.
Their ideologies. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I have known some librarians in my life. And those librarians, they're pretty tough cookies a lot of the time, you know? I really admire these, mostly women in Ukraine, doing what they did and the accomplishments that they have. I have no information on how we could donate or help, but I'm so fascinated by this subject, I'm going to look it up and hopefully on our
well,
next show...
Well, you know, we could add something to the website, too.
Sure.
If you can find
sure.
something, yeah.
Yeah, because I thought that was just really a tantalizing story. And I was appalled that it was libraries that they attacked first. I did not know that.
You know, and it makes me wonder, because humans have been so warlike in throughout our history, and how sinister it is mm-hmm. to, first of all, to wage war, but secondly, to try to eliminate an entire culture.
I know.
To be so brutal... as to wipe out an entire culture. What is it that makes any human that brutal? How did we get to the point where we could otherize people so thoroughly that we can wipe them out? It's a point of human nature that mm-hmm. baffles me, and it's been there forever. I don't get it.
There's a woman named, I'm going to forget her name, Margot Jefferson. And she is a writer, a critic, an art critic. And after the long war in Afghanistan, she was talking about art in wartime. And she wrote, "History cannot exist without the discipline of imagination." Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important to hold on to the art. Through art, we establish similarities between past and future, near and far, abstract and concrete. That cast received certainties. Unto doubt. You know, you have doubt, you turn it into certainties. So it just teaches us a different way to look and listen, I think.
So all that recording to the drawings on the cave walls, attest to we were there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This village existed. These people were real.
I was here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kilroy.
Kilroy. Remember Kilroy?
Kilroy,
his
yeah.
little nose over the fence.
Yeah, right.
So librarians then brought me to language and words. So let's talk a little bit about language and words. Really what happened was I came across a word that made me wonder, what is that word? I don't understand it. The word is Pecksniffian.
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 As a court reporter, that would just make my mind blow.
Okay.
I heard someone.
Pecksniffian.
I can take it down phonetically, but how do we spell it?
Yeah, we spell it just like it sounds.
Pecksniffian. Pecksniffian.
Mm-hmm. Pecksniffian. P-E-C-K-S-N-I-F-F-I-A-N.
Oh, please define.
Chicken sniffing?
It's not chicken sniffing. It is hypocritically and unctuously affecting benevolence, meaning...
Use it in a sentence.
I thought we could talk about a pusillanimous Pecksniffian, which means duplicitous or sanctimonious or sort of double talk, double dealing.
Okay.
That's what Pecksniffian is.
Ah.
So he's a real Pecksniffian. Double
talker. So it's a noun.
Hmm?
It's a noun.
Well, it could be
an adverb.
Adverb,
I think. We're all linguists here. Well, we'll look it up later.
Where did you see this
here,
word?
Let me see. Where did I see it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's an adjective.
Oh.
And most often in lowercase. Just in case you want to know.
So one is not a Pecksniffian.
Pecksniffian.
What could be a Pecksniffian pugilist or a Pecksniffian? What did you
call it? I said a pusillanimous.
Pusillanimous.
Pecksniffian. Pervert.
Pervert, I've heard of.
I heard that too.
I've actually met a few.
I was married to. Wait, I can't say that here.
I'm married to
community station. I forgot.
Did you guys? Calm down, ladies. Did you guys? When it was so windy last week, remember when we had that giant wind and the trees were leaning and it was howling? And I was thinking wind. And I started thinking about prairie wind or wind off the mountaintop or wind through the trees or wind in your sails.
Well, you're showing off.
And what I am? I'm just trying to tell
everyone
you what I'm thinking.
Everyone calls her windy.
Windy? But I wondered, how come we don't have more words for wind, like wind off the top of the mountain or, you know, what do, so.
We have a lot of names for rain, so.
Yeah, well,
not?
The Japanese have like 100 words for snow. But we do. I looked it up. There are 7 different words. Sirocco, it's a hot desert wind. Mm-hmm. Aeolian.
What is that one?
Aeolian. Not Aeolian.
It's a stiff wind. Tickly, very tickly.
It's related to Aeolus, the Greek keeper.
Oh,
he was the Greek keeper of the wind.
Ah, I love their sauce. Yeah, the aioli.
It's a spicy sauce. Then there's a gale, and that's only 32 right. to 63 miles
gale
an hour.
Gale force winds.
Gale
very
force
soon.
Winds, okay. 32 to 63. There's a zephyr, and that's from, you know, the Greek god.
I always wondered what that was.
And in English, it might have received a light push from Shakespeare, who used it in 1611 to describe the wind. Mm-hmm. Then there's a squall. And, of course, we all know what a squall
we
is. Sudden,
squalls,
violent.
Yes,
they call it violent wind. And that's the kind of wind we had last week, I think. And weather, W-U-T-H-E-R.
From Quathering Heights, I'll bet.
Quathering Heights.
That is a descriptive term, I bet.
To blow with a dull, roaring sound.
To blow with a dull, roaring sound. Weather.
And then, Susan, do you know this term? Haboob.
I'm afraid to touch it, as it were.
Haboob is H-A.
Usher Haboob.
Haboob.
Hey, boob.
Okay. Yeah. It is from Arabic, and it refers to a violent dust storm. And I've been in a haboob.
Oh, really?
In Arizona, they have, in Tucson, they talk about the haboobs coming. And, of course, I died laughing the first time I heard it.
Of course.
It sounds like maybe the naked bicyclist or something in Fremont.
Right. Here comes the haboobs.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's what I know about words for wind. And I thought, you know, our language is just fascinating, and I could talk about it all day long.
Let's let our underwriters.
Oh, let's
talk to us.
Okay, thank you, Susan.
VOV programming support is provided by Pandora's Box, Vashon Island's provider of quality pet foods at competitive prices. With over 100 years of combined knowledge and experience in pet care and pet nutrition, you'll find Pandora's Box on Vashon Highway, north of the main intersection.
This portion of VOV programming is brought to you by Minglement, Vashon Island's natural marketplace for the conscious consumer, where owners, staff, and customers alike embrace the importance of natural, organic, and non-GMO food and products, along with supplements, tinctures, gifts, bulk teas, spices, and herbs.
No,
find them at Center,
this.
Where the town of Vashon originated.
That's Kat Eggleston.
Kat Eggleston.
That name was that Kat. Voice.
Hi, yes. Kat. okay, so where are we? Oh, you're listening to the voice of Vashon. You're listening to The Klatch on 101.9. And I am Linda Nygaard here with Susan McCabe and Jennifer Potter. We're talking about words and history and art and Christmas and all, you know, all manner of things that come to our mind. Today we have a dog in the
yes,
studio. She's a gorgeous, beautiful. What is she?
Gosh, we really don't know. She's some mix of shepherd, German shepherd, lab, and pit bull, I think.
She doesn't look pit bull.
We really
at all,
made it. She's
she really
got
looks...
a pit bull butt.
Does she?
Yeah.
She's bigger than I remember. I don't know. I don't know why. When I saw her at the door, and this is a dog. This is one of our neighborhood dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm familiar with her, but maybe I'm shrinking. I don't know.
She's kind of notorious in the neighborhood because she's overly sensitive.
Yeah, she is.
Well,
she's
who
darling.
Isn't? Yeah. Is she named after her color, nutmeg?
I don't know. She came with that name.
Okay.
But
she
presume
did.
That's got to do with her color.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what I wanted to talk about was dog names. What a great segue.
Yeah. Love it.
Specifically middle-aged. Medieval.
Old dogs.
Middle-aged dogs.
Old dogs in old days.
Yes.
And medieval dog names were really interesting. Sturdy, Whitefoot, Hardy. And in The Nun's Priest, they have a line where they name three dogs, Cole, Talbot, and Gerland.
Do you think this is because they were working animals more at that time than they are little pets now?
Yeah. And they
those
were,
things
they,
sound so...
Then well, they
where,
were
did
useful,
where did
strong.
honey ball come from? Isn't it? I read that. There's
honey ball. Honey ball?
Or, no, it's okay. Horny ball.
Oh, horny ball.
And Gaylord.
Lard?
Gaylord.
As opposed
with
to...
an E on the end. Maybe even umlaut.
I don't know. That might have something to do with activity.
Argument.
Well, they used to name their dogs after kings and princes and very strong. So, yeah, that's a good observation, Susan. They also have really weird cat names, too, like Belaud, B-E-L-A-U-D, which belonged to Joaquim de Belay in the 16th century. And Martino. Just really interesting sort of names that come from places we don't know.
Spot or Fido.
Yeah, they didn't do that. Cats were often named Tibbert after Gilbert. I don't know what that means, but Gilbert was somebody. Or in England, domestic cats were known as
Chaucerian.
Yeah, it was probably Chaucerian.
Yeah.
That's why we can't read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought it was interesting that they named their dogs after kings and always really strong, impressioned people.
Well, I have a friend who named her dog Toy after one of our recent presidents. The dog Toy was an orangutan.
Oh, my God.
And the dog Toy's name was Donald Trump.
Oh, my God.
Which
gosh.
I thought was kind of an insult to orangutans.
Well, in medieval times, they often named their animal after their occupation, what they did for a living. Like a locksmith had Hammerel, and that means little hammer.
That makes sense.
And there's one called Little Spoke, because he was a wheel maker.
What about people who... dug septic systems. Oh,
I was just going to say one of the seven words.
Oh, do either dear. Of you have had exotic dog names in the past?
Exotic?
Yes.
Or unusual?
Well,
fun?
I had a chow, beautiful cinnamon chow, and her name was Chi-Chi Loretta Red Dog.
Ooh, that's a mouthful. I like it.
I mean, Chi-Chi is what we called her, you know, but it was Chi-Chi Loretta Red Dog.
I had a ginger cat named T. Luther Twitch Cat.
Ooh.
But, that's probably the most exotic name I've mm-hmm. had. The rest have been pretty standard.
Yeah. My grandmother in British Columbia always had, they weren't collies, they were cattle dogs, and they were always boys, and they were always named Buster.
My mom has, I think, the same three dogs the last 30 years, are all named like Carmen and Mocha. So you just know when you go to her house, there's Carmen and Mocha. The dog that we just recently got from rescue, they gave this dog the name Jazzy, which I really dislike. I hope I'm not offending anybody out there if their daughter or their dog is named Jazzy, but... they were listening to NPR at the time,
mm-hmm.
and when they have to quickly name dogs, you know, that are in these sort of adoption systems, mm-hmm. they have to think of something really quickly and not maybe based on their personality. So this dog came to us as Jazzy, and we all agreed we had to change it, lickety-split.
So what's it now?
We went with Pippi.
Oh, yeah,
and we really
that's
mostly
right.
call her Pip.
Is it a P-I-P-I?
Yeah, maybe double P.
Maybe
double
P.
She hasn't written her own name yet.
You haven't taught her to sign it yet?
Yeah, she's Pippi Potter. She is a redhead, and she's kind of like a Pippi Longstocking. I had to tell my kids who Pippi Longstocking was.
Wow.
Which was interesting that they had never heard of her, who was a character who always made me very nervous when I was a kid. She just mm-hmm. definitely thwarted all the roles, mm-hmm. and she's kind of a truant, and... I didn't really love that character, but I thought Pip or Pippi was cute. And it seems to have stuck.
Yes.
This is a very pippy, peppy dog.
I've noticed that you tend to name your pets from literary characters. And I'm thinking of the cat, who is?
Tiger Lily.
Tiger Lily, yes.
That's my daughter's doing. Ah. And you know, that was a cat from a litter that was born in a barn here on Vashon. And we got a brother and a sister, and my son named the black cat Assassin.
Which oh my goodness.
He was all black.
Oh my goodness.
He was really into ninjas at the time. And so when Henry was really little, we picked up this cat. He said, I'll name mine Assassin. And then Chloe said, this is Tiger Lily.
Tiger Lily and Assassin.
It really rolls off the tongue, huh?
That's so funny. Well, my son brought a snake home one time and he named it New York City.
I grew up with quarter horses. You know, they have registered names. They're very long. Sometimes they're five names long because they talk about there's sire, there's the mayor in there, there's other bloodlines that are encapsulated. And then you basically just end up saying, you know,
something short.
Socks. Yeah. You just kind of change it. You have to change it. But I think dog names with male names always bother me, like Steve or Larry.
I love Kevin for a dog.
Okay. I have a cousin who has a Kevin. And all day they were like, oh, Kevin.
I almost named my cat Gary just because it was so funny.
Yeah, I think that is funny.
But he, you know, his name is Diego. He does not look like Gary. He's black and sleek and shiny and
exotic.
He's exotic looking. He looks like a panther. He's not Gary.
Gary wears a mock turtleneck.
A dicky.
Totally a dicky. Dicky material. Also something my children didn't know about.
Dickies?
Yeah.
You know,
we wore them.
Yeah. The generational changes have been astounding.
Alarming and sad.
Well, I recently went to the Korean spa where women are all naked, you know, walking around. And man, is that a tattoo shopping opportunity.
Oh, that's true.
Tattoos have taken on a whole different meaning for my generation.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be trashy.
Yeah.
And now it's style.
It's social cachet.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a tattoo, Jennifer?
I have a couple, but they're tucked away. They're personal.
I'm going to get one.
What are you going to get?
Well, it's a secret.
Okay.
And it'll be visible.
We'll see you at the spa, I guess.
Yeah, I guess we will. Hey, I've been thinking about something else, too. I know you guys have. We touched on a little bit about Christmas and the holidays.
Uh-huh.
Are you eggnog drinkers? Do you like eggnog?
I like homemade eggnog. Mm-hmm. I'm not real fond of what you get in the store.
Yeah, it's not very good. Well, I started doing a little research on the history of eggnog, and a lot of people really don't like it, but it has been around forever. And there are several different kinds of eggnog.
They all have eggs?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, they don't.
They don't?
No.
So what do they call it? Nog-nog?
They call it eggnog without eggs, I guess. I don't know. Huh. But if you think eggnog is tame, you know, like there's a lot of tame ideas around eggnog. In 1826, cadets at West Point, including Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee, erupted into a riot after drinking too much contraband nog. In the melee, cadets destroyed furniture, smashed windows, took up arms, and even shot at a commanding officer. They missed due to their level of inebriation. In the end, 19 students were expelled. For drinking too much eggnog.
That has to do with the mixer, I think.
Maybe.
You know, eggnog can be tame, but that apparently wasn't. There's a lot of bourbon in there or something.
Yeah, it's rum, bourbon, or I'm thinking probably about the Tom and Jerry mixed to make.
That's
but
the
what goes with eggnog when you booze it up?
Rum or brandy.
Rum.
Yeah.
Rum.
Brandy.
Brandy.
Yeah, that's brandy's pretty good in there, I think.
It's heady stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So another tale is that in April of 1843, the Army of Texas Republic found themselves facing two problems. First of all, they were imprisoned by Mexican General Santa Anna, who had captured them during the raid. And the second was it was the anniversary of their victory at the Battle of San Jacinto. So the prison atmosphere wasn't, you know, conducive to celebrating, and they wanted to pep things up. So they smuggled in mezcal, sugar, eggs, and donkey milk.
Naturally.
And they made eggnog.
Yeah. Who milked the donkeys?
Well.
Of course you'd think that. Yeah, right. How do you really do this?
And Susan, here's about your eggless eggnog. It was called a posset, P-O-S-S-E-T, a British cocktail consisting of curdled milk, alcohol, and sugar.
Yum.
Yeah.
Sounds like college to
enough
me.
Alcohol would make it tolerable. Yeah,
but they used to prescribe it for colds. Drink a bunch of this and you'll get over your cold. But it's an eggless. And then there's Nog with Kahlua and ice cream, which is a Canadian invention. That sounds kind of good.
That sounds refreshing.
Yes.
And they call it, you set loose the moose when you drink it.
Set loose the moose.
Could be also a dance craze. Yeah.
So, depending on who you're dancing with. So if you'd like to let loose the moose, as they say in Canada, you can find the recipe for this eggnog on Gastro Obscura. GastroObscura.org.
U-R-A, yeah. Gastro Obscura. I bet there's some other great recipes on there, too.
Well, there probably are. Yeah. I mean, there are. I know there are.
Okay. In honor of your food thing, Nygaard,
she always scolds me because we talk about food.
I always make jokes because she used to do Stirring the Pot, which was a food show. And every time we do, every time we do the Klatch, there's food. So you got eggnog. I got the oldest known cooked recipe done by humans.
Who did it?
Somebody 30,000 years ago.
In where?
God.
Egypt?
No, in the northwest Zagros Mountains, wherever that is.
Mesopotamia.
Ooh.
You know that?
I think
She's
I remember
good.
This from horse studies. Yeah. From where the first horses came, derived.
Well, yeah. there was no horse manure involved in this particular recipe, for which I'm grateful. But it was grass seeds, two parts grass seeds, and one part lentils.
Rough it.
And what do you do with that?
You soak it overnight. Then you grind it with a pestle and mortar. And then you keep going until it's mush, with most components in the 1 to 2 millimeter or smaller range. Add a little water as you go, if needed. Add more water until you have a thick paste. That would make it thinner, I would think. But anyway, scoop the mixture onto a flat griddle or a frying pan. So did they have a hot rock or what?
So it was like a bread?
Yeah.
Like a flat bread kind of thing.
Browning, yeah, it is a flat bread, exactly. So you cook it in for 15 minutes on both sides.
Well,
you
know, and they also had a clock timer, right? Or like a kitchen timer.
No, it was their sundial.
Yes, their sundial.
Well, you know, that's interesting because grass, maybe it wasn't really grass because I know, and this is just conjecture on my part. I did some harvesting of wild rice with the Ojibwe in Minnesota. And it's that black wild rice that we get from Minnesota. It's not rice. It's grass. And the natives know that.
Well, wheat is grass, too.
Yeah,
so
it could have been a grain, not like grass seed we think about for our lawns. So it was probably different.
So here's another shocker, though.
What?
Along those lines. Pistachios, almonds, and cashews are not nuts.
Pistachios, almonds?
And cashews.
What are they?
They're droops.
Droops.
D-R-U-P-E-S.
I did not know that. I wonder.
It's a fruit. They're grown on trees.
Droops.
But the pistachios are really weird looking. They're like this red bulb with a pistachio hanging out of the bottom. Looks almost like,
beep,
like a turd.
Well, that's not one of the seven words.
No, turd.
So say it again.
It is now.
People, yeah. So, Jennifer, we were briefly mentioning a minute ago the Tom and Jerry thing with regard to food and Christmas. And I'm not a Tom and Jerry fan at all. I've made it, and I think it should be good because it just sounds so good with sugar and eggs and rum and cloves. And
it does sound good.
It does, But here's how it was written in the New York Times obituary by a reporter named Alan Dale, who claimed this drink as his own. The gentleman that he was writing about. One day in 1847, a gentleman asked me to give him an egg beaten up in sugar. I prepared the article, and then I thought to myself, how beautiful that egg and sugar would be with some brandy in it. So I ran to the gentleman, and I says I, if you'll only bear with me for 5 minutes, I'll fix you a drink, and that'll do your heartstrings good. He wasn't at all averse to having the condition of his heartstrings improved, so I went. Mixed the egg and sugar, which I had beaten up into kind of a batter, with some brandy. Then I poured in some hot water and stirred vigorously. The drink realized my expectations. It was the one thing I'd been dreaming of for months. I named the drink after myself. Kind of familiar. I had two small white mice in those days, too. One of them I called Tom, and the other one was Jerry. So I combined the abbreviations in the drink, as Jeremiah P. Thomas would have sounded rather heavy, and that wouldn't have done for the beverage.
So that's how it became Tom and Jerry.
That's how it became Tom and Jerry. Yeah. And then there are lots of stories about Tom and Jerry's and the different flavors you can put in and the different police raids that happen because of them and, you know, derangement that you get from drinking too much.
I have a story about my uncle's wife who he just married and her having too much Tom and Jerry and slipping out of the hot tub and out of her bikini at the time. And it was, you know, and as much of a hippie as I am now living on Vashon, we weren't really exposed to our relatives' breasts or any other private parts back in ye olde Idaho when I was growing up. I just remember that Tom and Jerry. Strong stuff. I mean, my parents and their friends always had Tom and Jerry parties over the holiday, and they had the accoutrements. They had the set.
Yeah. That giant
the big
punch
bowl and all of the cups hanging off the side. I just thought they were so elegant, and you could smell, you know, just waft up and sometimes like burn your eyes as a child.
It was burning something. Enough rum, yeah.
Yeah. The very first Tom and Jerry I ever had, I was 16 years old, and I was at a party of my parents' best friends. And the adults said that we could try it, my girlfriend and I. And so they gave us a little cup of it and we tasted it and we were like so cultured and aware and we just, you know, oh, so good. And we were being so polite, little pinkies up with the cup. And then the adults went about their own business and we ran back to the bathroom and threw it away.
We threw it
in the sink because we didn't want anybody to see us
of course.
You know. Yeah. And so then we came back out and snuck in the living room again and just sat there with our empty cups, like we knew what we were doing.
It's so funny how you tried that.
Yeah, they call that an acquired taste.
It must be.
And my son's take on the whole idea of acquired taste is, if it tastes like crap the first time you taste it, why do you want to try it?
Why
again?
Do you?
But it works for coffee.
You might be right. Yeah, or Cook's champagne, which is it's not even champagne.
It doesn't work for that.
This is what I was exposed to as a child.
Yeah, me too.
Speaking of Christmas traditions, all the Cooks always came out. The Baileys and then the Cooks.
Andre,
always on
cold
Christmas
duck.
Day. Oh, yeah. Blue Nun, White Zin, Red Beer.
Well,
and the Cooks. And I just thought, God, I'm so glad I tasted actual champagne later in life. I just never would have gone back, but I'm kind of with your son. Why bother the second time? Like tequila. Does anyone love the taste of tequila?
Not by itself.
Right.
Yeah. I know people who do, and they like to
they
sip.
Lie, they because they like how it makes them feel, I think.
I don't know. I've tasted
it's really
a couple.
Good, really smooth tequila might not be too bad.
It's not bad, but it's way too expensive to bother with. I mean, it's really expensive. I've tasted a couple of them, and I like them, but it's not something I crave or want to go to next.
Are either of you martini drinkers? I mean, I don't love the taste of a martini, but I will certainly partake if someone else is because it seems like what you did when you were 16, like you're cultured.
They're festive.
Sure.
Martinis
are
pretty.
Festive,
yes.
They're difficult to hold, personally, for me. Just kind of clumsy, but.
And try to actually keep the liquid in the glass.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Even on the first one.
Even on the first one, yeah.
I just read about a guy who's 100 years old who goes to the gym every day and works out for 3 hours. And he has...
He's 100?
100, yes. And he has a pretty normal diet and he drinks two martinis every night.
A two martini evening?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think his longevity is definitely genetic.
You know what? I think he forgot what he did the day before. That's why he goes to the gym again the next day.
To kind of bring him around.
Wait, you're back?
Weren't you just here?
That damn martini.
Martini, that second one.
Oh, yeah. Well, the third one is the devil.
Ooh.
You know, two is woof.
You've heard of those three martini lunches that mm-hmm. business people used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had them.
Wow. Okay.
But I knew people who had them.
Yeah. I guess I had them once. It was not fun. I'm going to change the subject a little bit.
Okay.
I'd like to talk about moms demand action for gun reform. Do you know anything about that?
It sounds like a good idea, but yeah. No, is it a new movement?
Yes. A woman named Shannon Watts has formed this organization, and it's all, you know, moms about guns. And she has traveled all over the United States talking to people about guns and trying to educate people about the political landscape. And she was a corporate communications executive and was in Sandy Hook. What town was that? Newtown, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And she was there when Sandy Hook started. And she said she was doing the laundry when she heard the news and was just devastated. She sat on the edge of her bed and couldn't figure out what to do, how to do, how do we stop this? And she remembered, she was from Texas originally, and she remembered back in, I don't know if it was the 80s, when Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, mm-hmm. MAD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they were highly successful in educating the public about drinking and driving and teenagers and that kind of thing. So she sent out some messages. I don't know where she sent them or how she sent them, but it was a call to action for moms. And she got so many replies from women all over the United States. So then she went to work and created this army of mothers that grew into a coalition of volunteers, organizations, and elected officials. And she has just become a major force. She's the, you know, NRA's enemy, of course. But she says she's dealt with the mom guilt that comes with being a working parent and the payoffs that you get and that you don't get and all of those things. But what about if your child was dead from a gunshot? You know, anyway, the point is 140 women across the nation, just from her efforts, ran for office.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah. To you know, affect some change.
How many were elected?
You know, I don't know how many were elected. This article came out right after. I'm looking for it right now. Well, a 38-year-old mom of three was elected to the Indiana State Senate because of it.
Huzzah. Cool.
And she's also received a lot of threatening letters. And
of course.
You know, we're going to kill you and
yeah.
that kind of stuff. But she said she's going to be 52 in a couple of months. And this is her second chapter. She's going to really keep going on that. So watch for her.
Well, that reminds me of an NPR story I was listening to today. It was actually the New York Times thing that they do on radio. And this woman was talking about the uprising in Germany, the attempt to overthrow the German government and the underground organizations that were behind that. And the interviewer asked her if this was exclusive to Germany, and she said, actually, in the United States, we have far greater threats to our democracy, and they are armed. Because there's so many guns in this country. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, we have twice as many guns as we do people.
Wow. I don't have. Somebody's got my guns.
Somebody's got mine, too.
Somebody's got mine. I grew up with guns.
Well, I did, too, in the country.
Yeah,
I did
in the country. And,
but it wasn't guns like this. It wasn't guns like this.
They're not semi-automatic. And
no.
I am vehemently against anyone in my family sphere owning a gun. And I can't control that, obviously.
Mm-mm.
But I check in. I am one of those moms who ask if they have any in the house. Also, do you have any pornographic controls on your child's iPhone? Because my kids do not have iPhones, and if they're going to come over and visit, I want to know what they're browsing.
That is very cool, Mom.
That's the one thing I think that's the worst for me. That's the worst threat for me because it's so vast.
Mm-hmm. And it's so different.
It's so different.
It's so different.
It's a whole new game.
Mm-hmm.
And guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, years ago when my kids were in junior high, in central Illinois, the teacher asked how many kids in my kids' seventh grade class had guns in their home, and that they should all stand up. And the only ones who did not stand up were my son and one other kid.
Is that right?
The whole class.
The whole class.
I wonder what would happen if they did a poll nowadays on
Vashon.
Yeah,
I wonder. I wonder. Yeah, I wonder on Vashon who's got guns. I know some people who have plenty of guns who are really into guns here on Vashon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty sad. Oh, my goodness. We're down to 5 minutes and we haven't talked about our main topic today.
How did that happen?
That's what Klatchen is about.
Yeah, it's just what happens. We have sustainability issues on our mind as well.
Yes.
But I think we're going to wait and do that another time.
Well, I would like to run through the 10 ways to
reduce
your carbon footprint at home. And Jennifer, you've got it there on your computer.
Okay, the 10 ways to reduce your carbon footprint. One, create less food waste.
You know, that's a big deal.
That is a big
food waste. How much food do we waste? You know, you look at grocery stores and restaurants and...
Yeah, and in your own home.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you... So there's all kinds of pointers there about how to plan your buying and how to preserve what you have. And here on Vashon, lots of people compost their food waste. So that's
well,
a
that's
great
a good thing.
Great
yeah.
way to deal with it. Yeah. So what's the next one?
Ditch your grass.
Yes, ditch your grass.
There's
your
so many grass. Good reasons to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ground cover, gardening, rock landscapes, or in this part of the country, I suppose you could try to do cacti. I'm not sure how well they'd survive.
I thought this was to say no to drugs, but I'm understanding now what you're saying. Ditch your grass, yeah. It's a lot of effort. And permeability of our soils here is very important. I see that where... Susan and I live on the north end. We know where everything from our yard goes right down into
goes
the sand.
Goes right down.
Yep.
Three, save coral reefs by packing smartly for your beach vacation. That's a lot to do with what we put on our bodies, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is that?
Sunscreen.
What?
Save coral reefs by packing smartly for your beach vacation.
What does that mean?
It means don't wear a whole lot of lotions
forth
that go into the water, and don't bring plastic stuff.
Yes, indeed. Four, shop sustainably by buying less. I think we're all committed to that even this holiday season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Five, protect our forests. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, really.
That's our ecosystem.
Well, we better get out there and sweep our forest on Vashon.
Sweep them?
It's a mess.
Remember, Trump was talking about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God, I was never going to say his name.
Dang it.
Sorry.
Six, trade in for an electric car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that can be expensive. But although I started looking at prices for used electric cars or used hybrids, they're still out of range.
They're still outrageous.
I have one that's hardly has any miles left on it. I can't seem to find another one. I mean, it's a trend right now.
Wow.
Weatherize your home. I just did this. I just
put
weather stripping around every door.
Good.
Congratulations.
I love it.
Wow.
The planet thanks you.
Learn about the link between climate change and racial equity. Which goes a lot to, I think, your topic about sustainable housing. Yeah.
Yes.
Denser, lower economic areas actually have less carbon footprint because people with more money spend more money.
And you know,
flying
Vashon has a high carbon footprint.
Yeah, I'm not
because
surprised.
Of all the commuting, and we don't walk to town or to get the groceries.
Right.
Yeah.
I want an e-bike.
What a great idea! Nine. Consider carbon offsets. So flying less or paying for your carbon footprint. 10, pass it on. What do you think that means?
Talk
just
about
what
it.
You're doing
just
right now.
Just talk
on.
About
yeah.
it. Yeah, it's a huge subject and it's dear to all of our hearts. I don't know really what else can be said. Everybody's just got to be careful. And
well, just think about what you do as you go through your day.
Mm-hmm.
Reuse those plastic bags, or better yet, don't even get them. Insist that the store package things in paper. When you go to a restaurant, don't take home doggy bags if they're not in paper.
Yeah, the styrofoam is killing us.
Yeah, well, it's all, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. You can find little plastic particles in every part of your body.
You know, here I'm
laminating ourselves.
30 seconds and tell you, I watched something about J. Paul Getty with Donald Sutherland, and I don't know if it's Amazon or where it was I watched it. He did a marvelous job of portraying J. Paul Getty, because after it was over, I went and saw the real tapes of real interviews with J. Paul Getty. Yeah. he talked at one point in there about, you know, his dad bought an oil well in Oklahoma, and then it just grew and grew and grew, and they bought and they bought and they bought, and that's how he made all his money. But he's talking about oil as the only thing that's going to be in everything in the future, and that's how you're going to make your money.
Well, and there, he was right
and
about
he
that.
Knew he back knew. Then. He knew. Yeah. Gosh, we're out of time, people. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for being here,
Jennifer. It was a great time. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me. Have fun.
We will see all the rest of you in 2 weeks. All right. Bye-bye.